MS build to CS proj conversion, and if any of that means anything to you, then this might be too basic for you. I just want to make sure that's understood, because we're going to cover the basics of .NET Core for the people that have really not seen it before, and this is the introduction. So just as a warning, if that sounds like you, then feel free to go to a different session right now. I won't be offended at all. You can catch the video, and then we'll just make room for everybody else as well that wants to listen to the basics. Okay, thanks. And I've got a session this afternoon on .NET on Linux, and in that, I'll be covering some more, again, for the people that know what this means. Everybody else, don't worry. You'll know what this means in a minute. .NET Standard 2.0 and how that's going to work, and how we're going to expand, make it easier to adopt .NET Core libraries. Okay? So I'm going to go quiet again for another 5 minutes, but just want to make sure everyone's in the right talk. Thanks. So we're going to start in 2 more minutes. Just again, for the people that are very kindly standing at the back and sitting in the corridors and things, just to make sure people are in the right session, this is going to be Introduction to .NET Core. This is designed for the people that haven't seen .NET Core before but have heard a lot about it and seen things and just want to know what it is and if they should use it and when they should use it versus other frameworks and of .NET framework and things. So if you're already using .NET Core, if you're already an expert in .NET Core, you probably know more about this than me. So feel free to, if it's a conflicting session you need to catch, then feel free to catch that. I won't be offended in the slightest. So Introduction to .NET Core coming up in 2 minutes. Thank you. Okay, everybody, I don't think we can possibly fit many more in the room, so let's just get started now, shall we? Apologies to the sound guy already, I move around a lot, so I'll try not to do that too much. So there we go. Okay, hi, everybody. Hi, yeah, thanks for coming. As I've mentioned once or twice already, my name's Martin Woodward, and this is an introduction to .NET Core. This is designed for people who've just heard the words .NET Core, saw there was a .NET session, and kind of want to know a bit more about .NET Core, and want to know, understand how it fits in with the rest of the .NET universe. So to begin with, my email, martinwoo@microsoft.com, or if you want to send me some abuse on Twitter, @MartinWoodward. I can feel my pocket vibrating already, so the abuse has already started. Fantastic. Sorry you haven't got a seat, the people that haven't got seats. Hopefully you've managed to get some stickers as compensation. But yeah, let's get cracking. First of all, I want to say a big thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for giving me your time today. Thanks for standing at the back and sitting on the floors and out in the corridors. This is awesome. But also, I want to thank you for just being awesome community and an awesome .NET ecosystem. We're seeing at the moment a 60% year-on-year growth in active .NET developers. So that's just not people who say the .NET or who have .NET in their skills on LinkedIn, you know, that's easy. People who are actively using Visual Studio 2012 or above every day and are coding in .NET, we're seeing quite healthy increases in those. So brilliant, thank you very much. As you know, this is about .NET Core. 40% of the people who are downloading .NET Core are completely new to the .NET universe, which is great to see. It's great to see a lot of young faces in the room, as well as a lot of familiar faces in the room. And it's great to see so many new people coming to .NET. And the final thing I want to thank people for, in my day job, I look after the .NET Foundation, the open source side of .NET. And the community have just been amazing, just turning up with so much good contribution to the project, helping out build the future of .NET. And it's got to the point now where 62% of the pull requests of the code changes made to .NET Core actually don't come from people with Microsoft badges. 62% comes from outside of Microsoft, which is astounding. And it just goes to show what a vibrant open source community there is building around .NET. So thank you for being a part of that. And then finally, thanks to anyone who here is a package author. Who builds NuGet packages, you know, libraries for other people to use. Thanks to those people, we've now got over nearly 2,000 libraries on NuGet that support .NET standards, so work with .NET Core. And yeah, so thanks to everyone. It's been an amazing couple of years in the .NET world, seeing the reboot of .NET and seeing the reinvigoration of .NET community. And it's never been a more exciting time to be a .NET developer, so thank you. Just a quick one, show you how global it is. That's what the contribution, the value, these are valuable contributions to the open source projects. This was in 2015, and then these were them coming in 2016. You can see it's a massive global contribution, so that's great. Okay, as I say, it's a real new world for .NET. There's three kind of application categories that we'll focus on here. Windows applications, cross-platform services, and mobile applications. And as you know, there's lots of .NETs. You know, there is many .NETs. There's been .NET Micro Framework, .NET Framework, different versions of. There's UDP stuff now that's part of Core. There's Xamarin and Mono and things. So where do these fit? .NET frameworks, so the .NET that most people who is a .NET developer here knows and loves and has been using up until now, that's really aimed, targeted at Windows applications, at applications that require a UI, at applications that run on Windows or Windows Server. .NET Core is a new, lightweight, cross-platform version of .NET that's perfect for cross-platform microservices and websites, and perfect for going into containers. It's very lightweight, very modular, and it's been redesigned from the ground up to not only be open source, but to be work really well in containers, work really well cross-platform, and all that the new modern application patterns that we see. And then finally, but not leastly, Xamarin, obviously. If you want to build the next new hot mobile game, for instance, Pokemon Go, then you want to be using some cross-platform tooling, you want to be using opensource.net, and you want to look at the Xamarin tools, and you want to look at Unity also. The Pokemon Go, if you don't know, is written with Unity. And if you go to the About screen in Pokemon Go, what's even better is you can see, copyright James Newton King for Newton for Jason.net. And he saw that and he was so excited. It was great. So it's good to see opensource.net going into, all these sorts of areas. It's fantastic to see. I obviously didn't do this slide because that was an amazing transition. So there we go. You'll see my slides later. Okay. So, and then, the whole universe. We have underneath the main application types, we have the common, the base class library, you can think of it as, .NET Standard, a standard set of APIs and libraries that you can talk to and get through to the common infrastructure. And we obviously all also have a very rich set of tools, tools that you know and love. Visual Studio 2015's out right now. You want the latest update, update 3, if you're going to be using .NET Core. Visual Studio, the next version, confusingly called Visual Studio air quotes 15, or we call it Dev 15. Not to be confused with Visual Studio 2015, which is the real name. 15 is the internal version number, and it's really confusing. They happen to align this year. It's not the same thing as Dev 15 and Visual Studio 2015. Sorry about that. It'll get fixed when we announce the name for it. It'll all become clear. Visual Studio Code is a lightweight editor for code, which again is cross-platform, works on Windows, and is great for .NET, but is also great for a lot of other things, and works really well on the Mac and on Linux also. And then finally, Xamarin Studio for doing Xamarin applications, which again works cross-platform, but you would most often use that on the platform of your choice. If you're building iOS apps, you kind of still need a Mac quite often, so you still get to buy one of those shiny Macs, and that's cool. But you can install Xamarin Studio on it. All the common infrastructure, so the compiler, a lot of the base libraries, all the languages and the runtime, all of those common parts of .NET are shared between the .NET framework and .NET Core. And increasingly, Xamarin, which is based on top of the Mono runtime, increasingly the Mono runtime is also reusing large sections of the open source common infrastructure, projects like Roslyn and things like that you might have heard of. So we're trying to share more and more code up here and have less completely different versions of .NET. We're trying to share more and have a common base. The Mono stuff, none of my management chain back in Redmond are particularly calling out for us to, because Mono is part of a .NET foundation now as well. Nobody in Microsoft's particularly trying to make Mono be the same code base as .NET Core or anything like that. What we're trying to do is just reuse code. And that's the reason, that's one of the motivations behind all of this stuff being open source under a very permissive license, to allow that code to be reused as widely as possible. So just not to, everyone, we're here learning about .NET Core and it's the new thing and the new hotness, but it doesn't mean we're forgetting the .NET framework in the slightest. Especially, it's the best framework for building Windows applications, especially Windows desktop applications. So some of the new things in .NET Framework 6.2, to be honest, I have a Surface Book, so my favorite thing is the high DPI support in WPF. So I plug my Surface Book, which is stupidly high DPI, into my Surface Book dock, and then I have my massive monitors, which are as big as me, really, because I'm not that big. I'm not Dutch, and they're like lower resolution because of lower DPI. As you drag the forms over, just the DPI, it's being displayed through WPF and things scale properly, and you get a lot less of those DPI issues you see. Finally, This is like my only thing. I joined Microsoft in 2009, and when I started, I thought, it's really annoying that we can only have 260 characters, you know, that we can, and it used to break a bunch of stuff when I did a lot of builds and things like that. Finally, long path support is in .NET Framework 4.6.2. Yay! You know, cheers. Now, it may work in .NET Framework 4.6.2. Don't be expecting it to work in Windows Explorer yet. You know, you can now create paths you can't browse to in Windows Explorer. But hey, we're going to give you the tools, and if you want to shoot yourself in the foot, that's fine. But it's there. Yeah, we're exactly. And then also, it's worth pointing out that we've built some tools to help you sort of do some of these modern things with your .NET Framework apps. You don't need to come to .NET Core to be able to use the Windows Store, for example, or to be able to run in containers. We just announced last week .NET Framework support and Windows Container support for Docker. So you can actually take an ASP.NET 4 application running on .NET Framework and have that deployed into a Docker container that's based on top of Windows. And that works, and that works as of last week. So that's a new announcement. Now, those Docker containers running Windows Server are a lot bigger than a Docker container that, say, runs Windows Nano, which is the lightweight version of Windows for containers, or a Linux, you know, a lightweight version of Linux. They're a lot bigger because they bring a lot more stuff with them. The classic example is when you're using an ASP.NET app, you know, it has things like system.drawing, which require a bunch of GUI stuff, which just doesn't need to exist in a container that's not connected to a monitor. So it comes with a bunch of stuff, but it's possible, so don't think you have to do it. And equally, with Project Centennial and the desktop converter, you can take your really, 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 really old Windows Forms-based application that's been going for 10 years, 20 years, whatever. Everyone still uses it. It works. We still maintain it. It's great. Does the job. You just want to get it in the Windows Store, or you want to put it in your company store. You can do that now with Project Centennial. And actually, just to play with this, as one of my toy projects, I work on a thing called Open Live Writer. So anyone remember Live Writer from back in the day? Hey, there we go. It's a blog editor, blog client for editing blog posts. And a few of us got together and managed to trick Microsoft into giving us the code open source. So we took it out of, it was, you know, basically not being worked on anymore and was going to die. So we kind of stole the code from them, released it on GitHub, and then working on it as a spare project. Microsoft don't pay me to work on that. That's just an open source thing that I do because I like the program. And we took it and ran it through Project Centennial, ran it through the desktop converter application, and then put it in the Windows Store last week. And actually Scott Hanselman pressed publish live on stage at Ignite because he's braver than I am. And he had longer to wait as well because it was an hour and a half long session. And published it live in the store last week, so you can go get it. And if you look at the source code for Open Live Writer, it's available on GitHub. And if you go look, you can see this is old Windows 30. You know, this is code I understand. You know what I mean? This is like really old code. None of this WPF, you know, XML stuff. It's actually code I can read. So yeah, it's great. So it's there. It works. Xamarin gives you the best of both worlds when it comes to being able to develop with C# and C# libraries, but also being able to get full native performance on your platform of choice, iOS, Windows Phone, Android, whatever. And then just to cover quickly what's new, the thing that mattered to me really is that all the SDKs for Xamarin are now open source because they're part of a foundation which I look after. The new watchOS 3 support and the Xamarin Forms has got a lot better. People have been using Xamarin already. Xamarin Forms was a bit, you know, it wasn't as stable as it is now. It's a lot better and a lot more usable and a lot more stable. So yep, it's really good. Okay, we're here to talk about .NET Core. So why .NET Core? Well, first of all, as I say, it's cross-platform. So, and by cross-platform, I mean Windows, Linux, Mac OS, and lots of different flavors of Linux, because there are many, 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 many flavors of Linux, which we'll talk about this afternoon. The macOS support works as well, but we mostly expect people to use macOS for development, and then most people deploy to Linux when they're deploying, you know, to non-Windows systems, because they're a lot cheaper than, you know, you don't want to buy a bunch of PowerBooks to whatever, Apple books to run your data center. That's not very cost effective, but it would look awesome. And then you've got like fast, .NET Core is stupidly, like stupid fast performance. The benchmarks we're seeing, TechEmpower benchmarks that we're seeing right now, are putting us around about, what was it, 8 times the speed of Node, and then 3 times faster than Go. I think there's one Java-based framework that's still faster than us called Netty, which we're after. We're trying to get there. You know, we've beaten nearly every other framework out there. And we're definitely, obviously, everyone here who likes to code in C-sharp or F-sharp or whatever language, you know, it's definitely the best language to code in, the most productive. And we're getting the most performance as well. And interestingly, a lot of that performance has actually been driven by people out in the community running, say, backends for big game engines and things, and getting just stupidly fast performance. Orders of magnitude faster than .NET Framework. It's just crazy, crazy, crazy fast. And then I mentioned this already, the whole point of .NET Core is it's been redesigned from the ground up to be a lot more modular. So when you bring a component, you don't have to bring the whole of .NET and the GAC and everything else, you know? It's just individual components that are packaged that you can, that you bring in and then you deploy with your application. And then finally, it's obviously, it's open source, and everything's developed in the open by the team on GitHub. If you wanna, if somebody on my team wants to submit a change to .NET Core, they go through the same code review, the same pull request process as any of you people can do when you're contributing, if you want to contribute to .NET. I used to be an MVP back when I had a real job before I came to work for Microsoft. And I remember I found a bug in a defect in the way that processes were loaded, and it was to do with the case sensitivity of environment variables. And back then I used Reflector, and figured out where the bug was in .NET Framework, sent a connect issue to Microsoft, say here's the issue. And then that was in, oh, I can't even remember, 2004 or something. I think we fixed it in 2010, 2011. And I sent them the code, you know what I mean? Now that can just get done instantly and get sent and be fixed. So yeah, do that. There you go, there's the raw numbers of how we compare to say Node and Go and things. So yeah, it's just, big is better, by the way. It's just stupidly fast. It's just amazing. Okay. So when you're running .NET Core, there are two types of workloads today that .NET Core is very suitable for. So a web-based workload, a .NET, an ASP.NET Core web application, and there was a session last night, which you'll be able to catch on video, about ASP.NET Core websites. Now, ASP.NET Core can actually run on top of .NET Core or on top of .NET Framework and IIS. So if you're building a web application, then, and you're starting a new one, then starting it in .NET Core is probably a good idea, because then it's the most future-proof, yet it already works with things that you already know and all your existing infrastructure. So that's good to know. And then the other workload is console apps. Now, why is that? Why does anybody care about console apps? You know, A, it's great for a demo, because I can do Hello World, so that's important. But more importantly, console apps are things like batch processes, or web jobs, or anything that's background processing is really a console app. And in fact, in .NET Core, a web application is actually a console application that just happens to bring a web server with it, you know, that we wrote from scratch. What could possibly go wrong with that, I think? You know? Barry Dorans has been very busy. For people that know Barry, he's the security guy in our team, so he's been quite busy. But it's been good. Then on deployment types, the way that .NET Core has been built is for your applications to be entirely self-contained. you can create a build of a .NET Core application, and all of the bits live in the folder for that application. You can X-copy that folder, take it to another machine that's never seen .NET before, run it, and it runs. Even better, you can take a version of your application that's running on .NET Core 1.0.0, and then you can take a version of another application that's running, it's not out yet, but say .NET Core, 2.7.6, whenever we get there, yeah? Those two applications run side by side, and those two frameworks don't touch each other. And this is key. This is key for when you're doing services and when you're trying to deploy to different machines. You can upgrade your .NET version with your application, and then if something horribly wrong goes wrong, which I'm pretty sure it won't, and call Microsoft support if it does, but if something was to go wrong and there was an unintended problem between your application and .NET, then you can just roll back the application and you haven't broke the box. So, a question, sir? Is the GAC still there? How you say in Dutch? The Hach? There we go, yeah, because of the silent G. Yeah, that's great. So the GAC, the GAC, isn't there, no. So things don't go in the GAC anymore. Strong name sign-in, thing of the past, yay, finally. So it's not, which is a good thing. Now, what you can do, and where we would have used the GAC or the hack before in the past, my Dutch is awesome, I'll show you later on, is we're in a shared mode. And that's where, when you install .NET Core on your machine, you get an instance of .NET Core in a directory on your C drive. And you do not have to deploy .NET with every application, because that can be quite wasteful. If you want to have a version of .NET installed on the box that then lots of applications use, and you don't want lots of copies, then you can do that and have a shared version still. So we still support both modes, but we built it to be self-contained because it's a lot easier to go from there back to a shared mode if you need it than if you start off in a shared mode, which is where .NET Framework is. Like, trying to go this way means you have to rebuild .NET, which is what we did with .NET Core. So don't do that, because you can avoid it. And then isolation level. .NET Core has been designed to work awesomely. Is that, that's not even a word. Really well with containers. I must have been listening to too many presidential debates from America to invent words like that. Work bigly with containers, and it also works fantastically on bare metal, so it works directly on the box. The container stuff's interesting, and I hate to say this, but at the same time as my talk this afternoon at 1:30, there's another talk about using .NET Core with containers. I'm quite tempted to go along to that talk rather than turn up to give my own, because it should be really interesting. Containers, if you don't know, and if everyone's thinking about Docker, and it's, again, new buzzword, using containers has huge advantages, not just for deployment, but also in development, because you can have Docker running locally on your machine, and you can deploy your application to a Windows Server 2016 container, have it running in your machine, be in Visual Studio and still be debugging and stepping through code that's running on a Windows Server 2016 container. Or you right-click in the menu, say, let's use Linux containers now, and then you're running through that same machine deployed to a Docker container on Linux that's on your local machine that you've F5'd into from Visual Studio. It's amazingly powerful. And all those, when I had a real job, all those problems I used to have bashing the head of IT to let me have a machine I could actually develop on, they go away with containers because you can actually do your job. So containers, good. But if you need to go to bare metal, then of course that's good. And we do that a lot, and you do that a lot in development especially, but you can also deploy that way. Differences and similarities between .NET Core and .NET Framework. The marketing people wouldn't let me do .NET Core versus .NET Framework there. I had to do and, so more friendly apparently, but there you go. So the important things here are, and some of these are point-in-time things, so I'll point them out. So right now, is this, you know, similar APIs you can use. You can build a library which supports .NET Core, and that works great with .NET Framework. You know, you can go that way. However, if you have a library that only supports .NET Framework, then right now it doesn't run with .NET Core. So you need to do some work with your libraries at the moment, but we're trying to help fix that in the future. And as I mentioned, both support ASP.NET Core and Entity Framework Core. So, you know, we moved from using ASP.NET 5 to ASP.NET Core because people were finding ASP.NET 5 confusing. But ASP.NET Core as a name is also confusing because it doesn't need .NET Core. It can run on .NET Framework as well as .NET Core. And then obviously there's an amazing Visual Studio experience, and both can be used with Docker now, which is great. And both use the very latest C#. The .NET Framework, the VB support for .NET Core is coming. It's not here yet, so that's on its way. So right now, if you've got a lot of VB code, you have to stay with Framework. F# support is closer. Again, that's coming very, very soon. But and it's already there. You know, it's already there that it works, but it's not. I wouldn't use it in production yet, possibly. So that's coming along. And then .NET Core is cross-platform. If you want to run a .NET application and deploy it to a Linux container or a Mac or something like that, then .NET Core is the way to go, not .NET Framework. And there's no way of us getting .NET Framework to ever run on a Mac, so don't ask, okay? We can have a big, long explanation as to why, but basically, turns out they're very different machines. And the way of getting it to work is go build .NET Core and have a common runtime, which is designed to be cross-platform. .NET Core works on Nano, the lightweight version of Windows Server that's great for containers. And then .NET Core has a very strong command line experience, but you don't have to use it. You can just use Visual Studio, and that's basically what we'll use today. Okay, so here's the breakdown of a great .NET Core application. Looks fairly similar, doesn't it? Okay. I've C# 6'd it. There you go, to make it less readable. So that's even better. So let's go back. So it's basically, it's like every other development framework, every other thing you've had before. You have the code, and then you have a project file, a manifest file that describes how to build and deploy and publish that code. So the code is just the same C# you know and love. And then, as I say, or the same C# 6 that you get to code review sometimes and change back. And then this is the project.json file. Okay, who's heard of project.json files before? Fantastic. Okay, well, you probably already do basic view this, so you should have told me to hurry up, but never mind. At the moment with .NET Core, we have a project.json file which describes how the project should be built. And it's a JSON file, which is great if you don't like XML. Brilliant. And it's very lightweight, tells you how to build the project. Now, over time, I'll go through this and then I'll explain something which the people who know about project.json already kind of know the punchline here, but I'll go through. So it's fairly simple when you go through. It tells you in the dependencies, you kind of say what dependencies you have. So that's the dependency on .NET Standard. So which version of the base classes, which version of my underlying framework do I want to be using? And then which any other dependencies you've got. So there's JSON.NET, but to say if you had reactive extensions or whatever dependencies you had, they actually get listed in here. And if you go into Visual Studio and go through NuGet Package Explorer, then all it's doing is just adding them into project.json. You could open project.json live in Visual Studio, edit it, hit save, and then the same magic happens, that NuGet kicks in and downloads the dependencies for you. And then on the framework side, which framework you want to target. So even though I'm running on, I've got that on 1.6, I might want to target .NET Standard 1.4 for my framework so that anyone running 1.4 or above can use this particular library. So it checks all those things at compile time. Here's a project.json file for an application. So, hello world. Hello world.exe, but it isn't hello world.exe anymore. But anyway, I'll explain that in a second. Hello world, the application. Okay, so the version is literally just the application version. So what used to be in, buried away in another file somewhere, that's just there. debug type, we had to invent a completely new type of PDB file format. You know, we can store the symbols with .NET applications, so when you're debugging, you get to know where you are and you can step through, and that's great. That PDB file format had to completely change for it to be cross-platform. It just did, because it was very tied to the portable executable file format. You don't really care. It just did. What's also important here? Yeah, .NET Core app. So I'm going to be a core application, and then type equals platform means that is I'm going to use the shared instance. So I'm going to use the version of .NET that is installed on the box. If I want to ship a version of my application, if I want to distribute a version of my application that includes its own version of .NET, then all I do is just delete that line there. Okay. So that's project.json. Now, project.json, awesome idea, especially from the web. Oh, thank you. Yeah. It was an awesome idea. Yeah. Especially for the web. However, the downside of it is it didn't work great when we tried to join up when we bought Xamarin, basically, and tried to join it up, the web world with the existing world. And then also as we were building a lot of the tooling experiences out for Visual Studio and the project file system, we were trying to get project.json to work really well with lots of Visual Studio tools. And we basically probably tried a bit too long. And so we've decided to get rid of project.json. And we're going to go back to good old-fashioned MS Build, as we all know and love. Yay, XML. However, it's slightly improved version of MS Build. But the main improvement is the one I've highlighted here, that you don't longer have to have every single file included there. And so now when you add files, you don't get merge conflicts in source control anymore. Yay, finally. So good things have happened by doing this. So, but as you can see, it's just the same data, just one with angle brackets and one with commas and curly braces. So, it's not that much different. However, there's sort of lots of consternation and gurning from people that don't like angle brackets. And sorry, we just had to do it this way. Apologies, but there we go. This is the disadvantage of being open source, is that people can live your mistakes with you and ride your little twists and turns as we go through things. But there we are. Yes, sir. The question was, will it upgrade automatically? Yes is the answer. So when you open the tooling to support the new SOG file format is going to be in Visual Studio 15, not Visual Studio 2015, Visual Studio air quotes 15, so code name 15. And yes, when it detects a project.json, it will automatically upgrade and create a CS proj file for you. So that's good. So that's okay. And also, the project.json is only used for building and distributing applications. It's only used at compile time. It's not used at runtime. So people who've already started building and deploying libraries and started work on .NET Core, all those investments are still there with RTM, .NET Core 1.0. So if you have a library written in .NET Core 1.0 using a project.json file, it'll work just great in the new world. It just works because project.json has nothing to do with runtime. I show you the command line. We're going to do more about command line at 1:30, I think, when I'm talking then, so I'm not going to demo that much today. But basically, the way it works is you can new up .NET, you restore, so that does a NuGet package restore, so bring down all my dependencies. You then build the application, and then you run your application. This is the only bit that's really interesting here. When you do .NET and then your DLL, when you run your application, when you compile, say, a console app, you don't get hello world.exe anymore. You get hello world DLL. And you say .NET hello world DLL. Because this .NET here is the command, is the path to the version of .NET that you want to run to do run the DLL with. You're telling the operating system by picking this command which version of .NET you want to be using, and this is a side effect of moving to a shared side-by-side capable system, is that whatever .NET is on your path is the version of .NET that's going to run that DLL. Okay, In reality, it doesn't affect you that much, but it's just important to know that that's what's happening. Most of the time, you don't do build and then call the ELL, you just do .NET run, and that does a build if it needs one, and then runs it for you. Okay, what did they say? Absolute power corrupts, and PowerPoint corrupts absolutely, or something like that. So let's just go do some demos. So I'm just going to do some quick stuff here. Just to go through. So this is Visual Studio 2015 update 3. I always now use the, because I do a lot of open source work, so I'm always using the community edition now, and it has all the capabilities and things that I can do, which for a guy that used to talk about ALM a lot and Visual Studio Ultimate, it feels weird using community edition, but it works great for .NET development, so that's good. So here we go, new project. And when you do a new project, you see you get the new, you know, the new core types. So we've got a class library, a console application, or a web application. So let's just quickly do a console application just for fun. There's Hello World. Now, let me do, I could do, you know, my, as I said, my Dutch is amazing. So I'll do the Hello World application that all my Dutch developer friends do, because it must be perfect Dutch. So there we go. Hello World. There we are. Fantastic. And then, so there's my application. It's just a Hello World. I can get rid of a bunch of those things if I want to, because I don't need them, but I'll just leave it. And then let's open up project.json, just so we can show it to you, a real one. So there's the version of my application. And there's use the platform. I'm using 101 actually, because we released a security update to 1.0 recently. So, yep. And then, you know, if you're a developer who's used to using Visual Studio and things, you don't need to really know you're doing anything different. You can just hit build. It just runs the same. I'm debugging. I've got over here, hello world. It's all the same, apart from one tiny, tiny thing. And that is, look. In the window, it's not calling hello world.exe, it's calling .NET.exe, yeah? So that's what I'm saying, it's using the shared version of .NET to execute my DLL. And if I go onto my C drive, wow, I can't even get to my C drive, I forgot to put my mouse in. In program files, so the 64-bit version, obviously, .NET, and then shared, we can see here are the versions of the .NET framework I have here. And there are the DLLs that go along with this particular version of .NET. So there's nothing in the GAC. It just lives here, the shared platform. Now, if I wanted to, I could come into my project. If I quickly go to my bin folder, we can see there is the DLL, console app.dll. Question? So which specific internals were you? Right, yeah. So the question was how is it structured with when you call out to other assemblies that are on the machine that already exist? If there isn't, you can still call out to assemblies that exist on disk and just load DLLs as you would already have done if you're loading DLLs directly. If you are calling out to NuGet packages, you can do that. The question you want is, what if I'm calling a DLL that's in the GAC, I'm guessing? And I'm not actually sure the answer to that. I'm just going to go and check that, and I'll get back to you, because I just need to check before I give you the wrong answer. I think I know. Oh, sorry, is the entry point going to be... Yeah, the entry point is .NET.exe is where the entry point is. Yeah, yeah. The working folder is the folder of your current application. I'll come make sure... I'm not sure I get in the question, so I'll come and grab you at the end, so we'll crack on. Sorry, apologies. So that's where we are there. And then if I come in here and I go to project.json, I remember I was saying this is the line that tells me about shared applications or not. So let's delete that line. Now, before I can do anything else, I also have to tell it. Now I've told it, I have to specify actually what runtime I want. So I'm going to come here, do runtimes, and just for now, I'll do Win10 x64. I think that's right. I'll find out in a second. I could have this. I can come down here and right click and do some property thing, but I can't never remember where that is. So I'll just hack the JSON file. But interestingly, doing the JSON file, what that showed me was, I don't even notice a little yellow thing popped up here. So as soon as I did that, it needed to go load some NuGet packages, and it just kind of does that in the background automatically. So there we go. And then if I hit play on this console application now, there we go. It's we're breaking. And if we look, the actual application we're running now is console app 3.exe, which isn't our DLL, which isn't our code. Console app 3.exe is a launcher application that gets created for you that then loads the assembly and runs it. So, and I can show you that on disk, but I'll not bother. So that's that. So it's just great. But you wouldn't really know those types of things, you know. And what's interesting is in the runtimes here, I could now actually come in and specify other runtimes as well. So I could specify the Mac OS runtime, the Linux runtimes, and I can build all those runtimes from Visual Studio on Windows, or I could build all those runtimes from my Linux build box, and they're all, it creates the runtimes for the different operating systems. So, which is pretty cool. The question was, can you do that in Configuration Manager? You know, I've never tried. Have I only ever done it in here? We'd have to have a look. We'll play with that later. I've got 5 minutes, so I'm going to crack on. And then just quickly as well, file, new, project. Obviously, if you built a website before, there's not much new here. But the one thing I wanted to quickly show you was the structure. So I'll do one of the ones that gives me a lot of gumph with it as well, all the Bootstrap stuff. So you see here, it's restoring all my packages. And then the important thing is here, a couple of things. So project.json will be a lot bigger because it's pulling in a bunch of dependencies, you know, all the ASP.NET stuff, which is interesting. And then if I go to the program.cs file, then that program.cs, there is a main, you know, for my web app. And it runs, it starts up and is a web app. So if I want to run under IIS Express, I can just hit play and, you know, the usual experience you're used to as a .NET developer on Windows, everything just works. There we go, once it's done over JIT and completion and stuff. While that's working, I'm just going to... There you go, it's already loaded. Great, fantastic. And then if I come over here and I do web application 3, okay, there we go. And if I did .NET run. Oops, ruin. Damn, my master plan from being a former Java developer hasn't worked. Let's try .NET run instead. Okay, there we go. And you see that's running the console application of Hello World, which actually fires up on port 5000 and then comes in here. And I can just do, you know, localhost. See, we're Linux friendly now. We've got penguins on Bing. It's amazing. It's a brand new world. And that run, and there we go. We've got .NET Core running. So that, it is literally just a console application, which is quite crazy. And then just a quick one thing I want to show you as a... there we go. CD console application. The best thing I like about PowerPoint, about PowerShell, is I can type ls and it doesn't shout at me now, is it? So it's quite good. So I can do this. If I do .NET and then console app 3.dll, that's actually what .NET runs doing behind the scenes. So it's just running it without building. So there we go. That's a .NET Core application. Okay. Super duper quick, I know. I'm sorry. Right, roadmap. Right now we have a version, a 1.0 of the runtime, so that's out there, which means that if you write libraries that are in 1.1, then you know they'll work with the 1.x versions. It's a supported API. The preview, though, confusingly, the tools are still in preview mode. So the Visual Studio tooling, the command line, that's still in a preview mode and they're changing. That will come out of preview here when the CS Proj file support hits. There's no date been announced when the CS Proj file support hits, but the usual convention with Microsoft is just figure out when we've got a big conference coming up, and you'll probably guess roughly when things are due, so have a look in the calendar. The CLI and all that, the MS build work is going to go on top of that. And then a lot of improvements to the usability of the Docker tools. So this F5 experience to be able to just deploy into Docker and debug and things, that's all in preview mode right now, and that's going to RTM very soon. And then the things that are coming up, .NET Standard 2, I'm going to talk a bit more about this afternoon. C# 7, bunch of new language features, tuples of the ones that I really love, but some new cool things in C# 7. And then a better offline experience. You see a lot of times when I'm developing, it goes out to NuGet and pulls down packages and things, and we're trying to improve that so you have a better offline developer experience, so you can do more development on the plane, which is always important. Or in the back of a car. I once wrote a whole booking system in the back of a car on the way somewhere. So that's important, offline experience. And then finally, making it more usable on more Linux distributions. So we're available on a bunch of Linux distributions today. But to get into, there's a lot of Linuxes. Not all of them we will support, i.e. you won't be able to call up Microsoft support and say, I'm running, my homebrew version of Linux and there's a problem probably with my homebrew version of Linux, can you please help me? We'll probably make you run one of the versions of Linux we know and properly support and prove it's our fault before we then help. But we want to make it usable on lots of different versions of Linux. And to do that, we need to make it easier to build from source and have less dependencies and things. So that's what we're working on. Okay, I'm sorry that was a lightning fast thing. I tried to condense two talks from Ignite into one. They were two hour and a half talks into 45 minutes. So hopefully it was understandable. Your English is a lot better than most of my American colleagues' English. So hopefully I didn't speak too fast. Thanks very much. Any questions, I'll come and grab you now. I'll be around the experts area, especially after my session this afternoon. Abuse me on Twitter. There's a couple of good sessions coming up. The Docker one should be good. That's my session. And then at 2:30, there's a good one on building ASP.NET. And then finally, any session by Bart de Schmetz worth catching. And he's on this afternoon on hidden .NET framework gems. So I'll be there. I highly recommend you are too. Thank you for your time.